The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and happy Saturday. And it's the day before the 4th of July. Be safe if you're using fireworks, which I don't know. I hope you're not, because my guest, Tony Podlaski, and I, we both have dogs. And I think animals are kind of afraid.
Yeah, I remember last year somehow my neighbors got hold of some fireworks, you know, just small stuff. And I remember my pug Andy, once the first one went off, she like latched on to me, like, oh, what's going on? And actually they also had a dog as well. It was a French bulldog. And the French bulldog also kind of, you know, went a little bit crazy as well.
So, I think they all do. I mean, it's a tough thing that. But anyway, I'd like to welcome Tony to the show this morning, affectionately known as Ski. He's been a friend of mine, I don't know, probably 9 years now that I've been.
It is going on to a decade here.
That's right.
Definitely a decade.
It is going to a decade, and he's a great guy, a very good friend, and I'm a little bit upset he can't go to breakfast this morning, but he's got one of five jobs, and he's got to go over.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things I have to do after the show here this morning is I've got to go to the backstretch, work on a story for Saratoga Today, something I've done now for the last, now my fourth year doing it. And they change their, basically their feature, at least my column every week. Last year was called the Winner's Circle. I think this year is From the Starting Gate. So it's something I do every week. I work on something unique, not something that's usually mainstream that you would, where I speak to either Todd Pletcher, Chad Brown, that's, you know, mostly everyone else will know. I usually look for more of the low profile, and more interesting stories that to make them, you know, more interesting and give them some, some human interest.
Almost like a history, like on MeTV. When they have an old show on, they'll give a background of it with the characters and
stuff.
And that's, you're given the background of that. But first, I want to, I want to get into something, I'm going to just list a few things that Tony does. He's an assistant professor of English, foreign languages, and an English as a second language at Hudson Valley Community College. He's won many awards, and even the big one,
the Chancellor's Award,
Award, which he still hasn't come down from, and that was how long ago?
2018.
Okay, 3 years ago, and he's still riding high on that baby. And he also, as he just said, writes articles, racing articles for many publications. And during the summer, he's the racing season. He's NYRA's press box coordinator and communications assistant. So he has a pretty long resume, and I'm sure there's other things too. I know he's involved in the community, involved with his church, he's got two wonderful daughters and a wonderful wife that are pretty neat. So,
yeah, you also forgot the 4-year-old pug in there as well, who's is part of the family as well.
That's right, but he's a male. You got all female.
Cash was the male.
Oh, okay.
He lived to 14, and then after he had passed away, and it's 3 years ago he passed away. I remember my older daughter Megan, came home from RPI in early September. Cash had passed away. Cash had passed away on our wedding anniversary.
Really?
And kind of put this in the an interesting story. We also adopted him on our wedding anniversary, had him for exactly 12 years after he had retired from the dog show circuit. But as I said, after he had passed away, it's been about 6 weeks or so. My older one, Megan, came home and said, we need a dog. And when the NYRA are looking at you, it's like, yeah, we're not ready for it. But it's like we, you know, after it, it because at that point, my younger one, Lindsay, was also going to college at Union her first year. And the house was really, really quiet. So we thought about it. And we contacted Joy Barbieri, who we actually adopted cash from 12 years ago, at least at that point. And I reached out to her and said, do you have any, you know, pugs that are, you know, would be adopted? And interesting enough, she had just retired a female pug who was really, really well bred. And interesting, another, you know, interesting part about Andy is that she is she's by, or her, you know, sire, father, whatever you want to call him at that point, is by the 2015 Best in Breed at the Westminster show. So, yeah, so when you see these dog shows on TV, you see Westminster, her father, her sire, was the Best in Breed, at least of the pug. So we adopted her, and after probably about a month after we adopted her, Linda had, kind of indicated, it's like she wanted to bring the dog to school. And it's like, well, how are you going to do that? Well, train her to be a therapy dog. So hence, you know, for about a year, Linda and I went to therapy dog class. Actually, they start out with beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And then they get it, so at least where they, after they advance, they'll get their AKC certification, canine good citizen certification. And then they're ready for the therapy classes. What I understand, you know, at least, you know, with therapy dogs, at least to train therapy dogs, if they can get through the intermediate class is to make or break for a lot of dogs for training. If they can get past that, they can get through anything at that point. You know, even the event, when they hear advanced, like, oh, it must be really challenging. It's probably not as challenging as the intermediate classes because at that point, they know their commands, they know what they have to do. Okay. And then by, you know, the therapy courses themselves, you know, they know what they really have to do. So they just have to, you know, pass the test. And at that point, it was about a year that we worked with Andy, and now she's a therapy dog. She goes to Sand Creek Middle School every day in Colony with my wife. And some days that, you know, if she's on break, I'll take her to, well, this was before the pandemic, and we'll get to that part here in a moment, but I would take her to college once in a while. So, yeah, you mentioned about the, you know, the volunteer work. One of the things we really want to do, you know, once we get, you know, at least once things, you know, still continue to move in the direction of normalcy here, we would like to get Andy out more to other places to do, you know, therapy visits.
Well, that's great. And, you know, I know Andy. I've never met him or met her. And but I have an affection for her because I found out she's a Yankee fan. And no, wait a minute, you're giving me a dirty look there. So, but Ski's a diehard Boston Red Sox fan.
Yes, big time Boston Red Sox fan.
So, I'm only kidding about the Yankee fan. But anyway, we see a lot of Andy on Facebook. So.
Yeah, she had spent the past week up in the Adirondacks. We decided to go. We tried for the first time renting a house in the Adirondacks, right in Jay. And you know, we were able to bring her up. And Andy had been on trails with us before through you know, at least some local places, you know, like Thatcher Park and Grafton and so forth. But it's like, all right, let's see, you know, what we can do. You know, going on a little bit further hikes, you know, in more of a, you know, at least an area where there are much more trails. So one of the things and anybody who wants to bring their dog, especially a smaller dog, one of the things I would recommend is get like what they call the dog backpack, where you can just put them on, you know, after, you know, because with smaller dogs, like with a pug, you know, she's going to last probably maybe like a, you know, half mile or so. And then we'll just put her in the backpack and she's comfortable just going right, you know, up through the rest of the mountain. I'm not going to say we're going to climb, you know, 8 miles on a hike,
right,
but we're able to get through maybe 3 to 4 miles, you know, out there. And that was the goal here. And, you know, and I think this was like a first time experience of renting a house, doing the whole Adirondacks. The only thing I'm really interested in to find out if she is the first pug to make it to the top of Whiteface Mountain. Cause we did go to Whiteface Mountain. We drove actually up to the top and kind of walked around, you know, looked around at some of the other trails, you know, there nearby.
That I mean, I followed your daily updates on how the trip was going, and it looked like you had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And the hiking thing, we just got into a lot last year because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. when, and there's a lot of stories I could share, what I've learned over the last 16 months about the pandemic itself from a racing side, from a teaching side, and so forth. But it was one of those things like, okay, what do we do now? Because everything became interesting going into the beginning of March, because we had plans of going to Florida to watch Lindsay play softball for Union. And it's like, oh, we're going to go to the Florida trip. And, fourth week of March when their spring break was. And when I got the call from Lindsay that Thursday before, the colleges are shutting down and everything, that, basically season was over. They were never going to have it. And it's like, okay, what do we do now? Because we had plans. Like, this is what we were going to do for the summer. And this was, we were thinking about January and February with all the plans and with spring break and so forth. And now it's like, what do we do? So we got involved more just because there was so much emphasis on just social distance and trying to not get out into public places as much. So we decided to go out for hikes. And so we started with some small trails, and then we started getting into bigger trails. And the best thing about it was that, at that point, and was what we were able to get out, move around, and not worry as much as, of this virus spreading, and just, staying distant from people.
Well, not only that, but it kind of gave you peace of mind a little bit instead of being stuck in the house or around your yard and just worrying about things. You could get out and exercise. That makes you feel good.
Absolutely. And yeah, it was, believe me, I know what it's like being stuck in a house for 16 months of teaching online. This was an opportunity to get out and say, okay, let's do something. And so since then we've been, as I said, we've been just working on trails and just doing a lot more outdoor stuff.
Nice. I want to talk first, before we get into the racing side of it, I want to talk about your experience as a college professor, how that pandemic affected you with your students. You're very hands-on with your students. I mean, and I can say this with all honesty because I had a family member that had you as a teacher. You're a tremendous teacher. You help students out through everything, even getting into a career after. How did that help you being away from the kids and trying to teach online?
This is an interesting part because once that Friday, Friday the 13th,
Friday the 13th, I rolled my bus into the yard and thinking you were going to go to work on Monday, and that was
it was at that point we knew what we had to do. And so for 2 weeks, let me just backtrack for a moment, because for me, it's easy to adapt to technology. It doesn't matter, because I've been teaching online for more than a decade, so this was not much of a challenge for me. The only thing that was, that I had to bring into a little bit was the Zoom element, at least working with that. So with that in mind, I said, okay, I'll do a little bit of training on this, and this. After a couple, because we extended our spring break 2 weeks to work with the training. So I was like, all right, that's good. And after a couple of days, I picked up on it. I was like, all right, I know what I have to do. But I had to also start working with other faculty needed some support as well. And that's where I jumped in a little bit more. But now here we are, basically the end of March, going to April. And the goal was just trying to get everybody through the rest of the semester itself. And so it's like, how do I do that every day with my students, trying to keep them engaged and so forth? So I think about being a television personality, but it had to go beyond teaching and being a television personality, because it was not only just basically saying, okay, good morning, class, how you doing, type of approach, being a little more animated, but I felt like I had to be a producer, soundboard, because I had to basically put tools up online and just ready, just being able to switch to a PowerPoint or being able to switch to a website, be able to work with activities, interactive activities, and switching from screen to screen. So after a couple of classes, like, okay, I know what I have to do, but others were still trying to, figure out how to work with it, and I end up, helping them out along the way. But, for those remaining, 8 weeks, it was a challenge to just, get everybody through, answer their questions, and more importantly, making sure to let them know everything was going to be okay. That was my goal for the remaining 8 weeks, to tell the students, let's get through this together and everything will be okay. It's like, all right, so now here we are in the summer, you know, doing a little more planning. It's like, all right, now I got to figure out what we're going to do for the fall. Took the same approach, you know, same animated approach of, again, being on TV, like a television host. And, you know, and I teach a 7 a.m. class. So it's like, good morning, everyone. It's 7 a.m. and here's our Comp 1 class. So right. It was one of those approaches. And, but the, and I also learned how to use music. So what I would end up doing is, you know, basically have music from, you know, YouTube videos and so forth. So I found out, okay, I can link this up to Zoom and be like bumper music, you know, getting into the class. So students are like, what's going on here? We have music. And it's like, all right. So, and, you know, sometimes I play like Boston or Queen or something like that. So you know, right. Absolutely. So, you know, the only thing I was missing, like coming at the top of the hour, we got Queen, Pink Floyd, and Led Zeppelin. And at the bottom, don't forget, we have Van Halen. So it was one of those things like, yeah, that was probably the only thing I was missing, but the students liked that music. And it was like, okay, here we are, top of the hour. Let's go. So it was one of those things where, you know, yeah, I think if anything, and we didn't require our students to put their cameras on. And I could understand, you know, why some students were, you know, a little resistant to putting them on. And it's a matter of respecting their privacy and so forth. But I will say there was a good story to, you know, one brief quick story to this where I met with a student after class. And I said, okay, you know, just turn on your camera so I can just interact with you a little bit better. He came on shirtless with just his boxer shorts on. It's like, okay, let's just put your camera back off now at that point. But, you know, I think, you know, if there were challenges, sometimes students wouldn't have their cameras on. So you always try to figure out, are they engaged or not? So one of the things I would always do, you know, with them in the chat box or work with some of the activity, you know, and say, hey, you know, because some students, their cameras were broken on their computers.
Okay.
Some didn't have sound, you know, at least their microphones weren't working. So the only thing, you know, if they're still engaged, it's like, all right, just respond in the chat box. So once I threw out a question and they, you know, typed in, you know, the chat box, because, and all of a sudden I knew they were, you know, doing much better. But I think, you know, it got me thinking after about a year doing this, it was, okay, you know, some students, you know, don't have the technology to do the virtual, you know, learning. Some, you know, do still struggle with the virtual learning because it may not be to their, you know, learning style. And my, you know, and again, kind of what you were saying, you know, a moment ago, it's just about me being hands-on. Yeah, that's how most students learn. Yeah, some are good at visual, some are good at audio, but most students learn hands-on. And it's just, how do you work with that through an online presence? It's just work with activities and just giving them opportunities to just, you know, follow along, even if they're limited with technology as well.
Yeah, I think one of the benefits, I can't say a benefit. I mean, there really wasn't a benefit from going through COVID. But one of the things that we need to improve on that is happening is the online aspect of teaching. In case there's ever a problem like this, we'll be better prepared. I think, wouldn't you agree that you'll be better prepared?
Oh, absolutely. I think most of my classes now, well, actually, let me backtrack on that for a moment. I've always had a lot of my materials online. So, you know, and as I said earlier, I've been teaching for more than a decade online. So a lot of this wasn't new to me. So, you know, the students always had access to notes. They always had access to the activities and exercises and so forth. The only difference was the videos. And now that I can do videos, it's like, yeah, I just throw a headset on, I put my microphone in, and it's like, let's go. And so, yeah, I'm always, you know, better. Yeah. And I think I'm better prepared for that, you know, that aspect. But as I said, you know, now that we're, you know, slowly, you know, and I don't want to say returning to normalcy, but yeah, to some degree we are, but I'm looking forward to being back on campus in the fall. I really want to be back. The students want to be back. And, you know, and I'll still do some stuff online, you know, with, and I may record some videos once in a while, especially if there are some students who, you know, cannot get to class or whatever the circumstances may be, you know, at that point. But yeah, I think if anything, you know, this pandemic, you know, while it's been challenging for all of us, there's been some benefits, I think, for, you know, for myself included, just, hey, here's the technology to make it happen.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you know, everybody talks about the new normal, but I think we'll be easing into normal at some point the end of the year or beginning of next year. I mean, there has to be some point of getting back to what we did. I mean, it's, I think we'll be a little bit more careful, like you said, wearing masks. In the wintertime, the flu was down really low. Colds, a lot of people you talk to said, holy gee, I didn't think about that. I didn't get a cold at all this winter. And, I mean, there's good things about wearing masks, and maybe even some people will start doing that again during flu season.
Yeah, if I wear one in the fall, and especially in the winter, it's probably keep my face warm. At least that's one of the advantages to that. But as I said, it depends on where you're going. And obviously, indoors, you know, viruses travel, you know, a lot more quicker, a lot more easier through, you know, than in, you know, than open spaces itself. So I think it's just a matter of just being aware.
Yeah.
Just, you know, of the environment. And, you know, if you think it's going to be, you know, a concern, yeah, you can always mask up, you know, but I think now we have that option to do that. Whereas at this time last year, we didn't have that option.
No.
You know, by any means. So, yeah, I look at a year later and I'm still, you know, somewhat shocked that, you know, we're, you know, still moving forward with everything.
Yeah. It's, you know, but things get better over time. Yeah. And, you know, we talked about that. Let's go into a little bit about the racing aspect of it. I, of course, as with everything else, I didn't see you at all last year. And for those who know me, they know that I am at the press box stairs, and I have a lot of interaction with the press. And I have a lot of friends up there, and it really did bother me that I couldn't see anybody. Of course, I don't know how much I could have seen you even if I was there. They had a limited staff because there were no fans. But give me a little bit last year. We'll talk about that, and then we'll go into this year. What was it like being at the track as a press box coordinator and as a writer? What was it like?
It was surreal. If I had to put it into one word, at least early on, was that it's a, you never. I think for any of us who've been up in Saratoga, that there's always been the excitement, the crowds, you know, the energy, everything. And going into the season, I talked to a couple of trainers, you know, going in, and none of us knew what to expect, you know, at least in regards to racing and what was going to, you know. And you know how everything's going to play out with the scene itself, but you know, especially when you know a few weeks before Belmont had not been racing, and a lot of you know a couple of horsemen had, you know had their concerns, you know, if they're going to be able to you know stay afloat, you know, from a business perspective. So they were glad that okay, you know, Saratoga's back, and you know they can at least race and you know. And be able to stay in business, so to speak. So,
sure.
And that's from everybody included. But the first week, you know, you watch the races, and yeah, you got some, you know, some trainers that are out there, and you know, some owners were allowed to see them, their horses as well. But I think the interesting thing, you know, every race, there was no crowd. I mean, yes, you could hear John Imbrial's voice echo throughout the track itself.
Right.
But if you really, the only thing you heard a lot of times as you went outside were the sounds of hooves just, you know,
wherever
trampling on.
Yeah.
Didn't matter if you're on the grass, if they're on the dirt, that's all you hear is the thundering sounds of just the horses, just their, you know, their feet just hitting the ground itself, which I thought was, you know, interesting. You also hear, you know, the jockeys, you know, kind of, you know, talking to their horses, I guess, you know, if you want to look at it that way. You know, you got that going on as well. But as I said, it was, you know, it wasn't like, you know, that energy was missing. And as the season went along, I was talking to some other trainers along the way. And I think Robbie Davis, former jockey, now trainer, he was the first to mention it. He goes, there's no energy here. And he goes, you have that, you know, that community, that great camaraderie in the backstretch, and you know, every day. But when it comes to racing, you walk into the track and it's just silence. you know, at that point.
And the horse, sometimes the horses need that noise. They need that fan reaction.
Oh, absolutely. Every athlete, doesn't matter if it's equine, dog, it doesn't matter what, you know, animal it is. You know, they're no different than athletes. You know, if you're Aaron Judge coming to the plate, yeah, you're going to be excited to hear the crowd at Yankee Stadium, sure. You know, cheering you for to hit a home run. You know, it's the same reaction at Saratoga. The horses do respond to crowd cheer.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a little bit on TV. I was having trouble with my back, but I watched some of the races on TV, and I just couldn't believe it. I mean, you just heard the call, like you said, you heard John, and you watched the horse race for a minute and almost 2 minutes, and then went right to Andy Serling or whoever,
right.
Whoever, and they talked for the time in between the races, and it was, like, really weird. I mean, and that had to be a hard part because – especially for the press, because after the race, you're down in the winner's circle trying to get an interview with the jockey or the owner or the trainer. You got the TV girl there for the Naira TV. There's so much action going on after a race in that or near that winner's circle, and you didn't have that.
Yeah, I mean, what they ended up doing was just they had a boom mic,
right?
About 6 feet away, and that it would allow you know, anyone being interviewed to, you know, be able to speak in the microphone. And even after the race, if anyone from the media wanted to talk to someone, you know, they would go to a designated area where it would be okay. Here's the press here, and on the other side of the rope would be just two who's gonna be interviewed at that point.
But it wasn't anything like me trying to keep the stairs open for the press to run down the stairs run down the other stairs.
Yeah, nothing like that. And I guess, you know, and it was hollow. It really was. You know, walking through the, it was not just to the grandstand, but just even on the grounds, it was just like really quiet. Because usually you hear, like you have that, you know, that small bandstand that's, you know, right off the escalators at the bottom.
Right.
There's no music coming from there. There's no smell of fresh popcorn, and hot dogs. It was, all that weird. Was mission. I mean, you would walk to the backyard, and there were probably more squirrels in the backyard than there were, you know, people. You know, and when I say people, I'm usually saying those who need to be there to work there. It was definitely a surreal, experience.
Yeah.
And as I said, it was interesting for the first couple of weeks, and then after that, it seemed like it was routine, you know, every day where it was just okay. We got one race after another, and just, you know, hoping that, you know, everything's okay.
Yeah, I Traverse Day, I called Mario, who's the guard for the stewards box. He was probably the only one upstairs, I said, hey, is there a fella up there, sandy blonde hair, brown hair, and his name's Gene? Because, you know, I always say hi. I only see him on Travis, Gene Kirshner.
Yep, Gene Kirshner, yep.
And he said, yeah, he's sitting right here. So Mario goes, hey, Rick Thompson's on the phone. Do you wanna say hi? And Gene goes, yeah, give me that phone. So he goes, I looked for you for 10 minutes, and you're not at the bottom of the stairs. I said, I'm not even there. And he said, well, my wife is in the hotel staying. She couldn't even come in to the track. And he said, if I knew you weren't working, I would have had, I've been here since Thursday, and we could have met for lunch or something. But at that point, too, you didn't want to do that even. But so you missed, I mean, at the track, there is, it's such an experience, especially at Saratoga. It's a unique experience because people really don't know what goes on behind the scenes of horse racing, or they're not involved in the action on the grounds. But at Saratoga, you have all of that. You can see the paddock area. You park in the parking lot across the street on the Oklahoma side. You can see the barns, washing the horses, grooming the horses. And then you get on the grounds, and there's so much action going on. Like you said, the bandstand, the band's always playing. It's you know, it's like a festival, but yeah, it's I don't know. It's amazing. And it's you have to be there to be part of that and feel that, you know, which leads into one of the stories that you told us about your writing is giving the background of what goes on at the track, not just the average everyday interview with an owner or a trainer. You're giving that person experience in words, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'm kind of paraphrasing at least this quote here, but Red Smith, the one of the greatest sports columnists that you know, to live, you know, write, you know, basically written for the New York Times and many others, he had said that there, you know, basically there's a thousand stories on the backstretch. Just pretty much just paraphrasing it, which is true. Every person in that backstretch has a story. Doesn't matter if it's a horseman, trainer, owner, groom, jockey, exercise rider, doesn't matter. There's always a story to everybody out there. And, I think it's, you know, that's part of what I do with Saratoga Today. And that's because it's easy to go talk to Chad Brown or Todd Pletcher and say, how's your horse doing today? Or, you know, X, Y, and Z horses, how are they doing today? But it's more so about with what I do. It's like, okay, how did you get involved in the sport? You know, what, you know, led you to being here at Saratoga at this point? So the interesting one last year that I interviewed, and because I don't think anyone has interviewed him, was Roy Lerman, who's a trainer. He's a trainer, but mostly he's more of a breeder. He's got a great farm down in just outside of Tampa in Florida. And every year he comes up with only maybe like, 12 to 16 horses, you know, probably half of them are 2-year-olds, as most horses are, or at least most trainers have up here just to develop them. And one of the things I did not know about him is that he's a practicing attorney. Basically he's got a farm, beautiful farm, as you said, you know, just breeds horses. And actually he was involved in breeding the Breeders' Cup winner Alphabet Soup, and at least he didn't have any ownership or anything. I think he probably had some partial interest in the horse, but that's like his claim to fame. It's like, you know, he bred a Breeders' Cup winner. He's not a high profile trainer. You know, he wins maybe couple races out of the year. Mm-hmm. He comes up here every Saratoga, as he's done for the last, over 35 years or so. And a couple of his horses really ran well last year itself. But, as I started talking to him, he gave me a little more background about how he got involved. And I said, well, what else do you do? And he said, well, I'm a practicing attorney. And his son, he's not only a practicing attorney, but he's also a judge out in Montana as well. So these are the stories I like to pursue because there's you know, it's not just, okay, how's your horse doing today? It's what do you want them to know about you?
Right. It's almost like a human interest story. That's
right. And the same thing when I was another story I had done last year was with Robbie Davis's son, Edmund, who was just, I think at that point, I think he was in his second year of training horses. And he didn't seem like he was going to be involved in racing, but he ended up just, getting, involved and started, winning, picking up some horses, started winning races and so forth. And you kind of learn a little bit more about the family dynamics and so forth because they live up here now. Robbie Davis, and most of his family are up here. Dylan Davis, his son is a jockey. Really, he's been riding well as from that aspect. But, again, I'm looking at those kind of stories. It's not about Dylan Davis, a jockey, or Edmund Davis, a trainer. It's more now about a family who's, basically his father, was great, he was a good jockey, but now the rest of the family's getting involved. His daughter, Jackie Davis, has, I think, been been riding horses at Penn National. But basically, you know, again, you know, things that I look at. I mean, there's so many stories I've written that are, you know, interesting by all means. And I'm trying to remember the story that I did a couple of years ago about an Australian, you know, trainer who just came here for one horse and spent the summer at Saratoga. The horse, you know, was overmatched in a couple of stake races, and then got into some allowance races, ran a little bit better. But basically, this one particular trainer had been, you know, been with this horse. They wanted to see what he could do here in the United States. And, you know, as I said, again, he was a little overmatched in a couple of stake races. But, you know, the interesting, you know, storyline was that this horse, you know, this particular assistant trainer was working with one of the prominent trainers out of Australia, and the horse that he had was just running into this monster, as everyone remembers, Winx, who, you know, won this winning streak in Australia. But again, these are the stories that, you know, you got to look for that go beyond just, you know, the daily, okay, the Chad Brown, the Todd Pletcher, you know, right. And others that are out there.
I've interviewed, meeting people, especially the young people that write for the special. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to see how they stay in racing in some fashion. And they've always started out up in the press box. And, of course, here again, being downstairs, they go by me every race once or twice. So you get to be friends with them. And I keep in touch with them, you know, on Facebook. And I've interviewed, you know, maybe three or four of them. And they always say, hey, you're going to be there at Saratoga. You know, we're coming up either for the sales that week or, you know, we'll be up for 2 weeks. And there's a great program that Gandolfin mm-hmm. has where these young people can go, I mean, to three or four different countries, Australia, Ireland, and learn the racing aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so that's the Flying Star program. And it's interesting you mentioned that because one of the, I guess you want to say graduates of the program, has done really well for himself now. And actually someone who was my intern for about three years, is Joseph Migliore.
Yes.
And again, here's a story about Joseph Migliore here as well. Joey just got married last weekend. So, you know, congratulations to him and his wife and you know, the families as well. But Joey Migs, as we call him, you know, or at least Joey, I would call him, he came up here first year. He was my intern in the press box. And what he would end up doing, it talk about someone who really developed a work ethic. In the mornings, he would be working with John Kimmel, you know, just basically, again, just hot walking horses, you know, grooming and so forth. And you know, and he had to be at the, it's not like, oh, you're at the barn at 8 o'clock and you're done maybe by noontime. No, Joe was at the barn at usually about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. He'd be working there till probably about, you know, maybe 10, maybe, yeah, probably about 10, 10:30, go back, get cleaned up, and then come back to the press box for the afternoon. And usually didn't leave till about 7, you know, or so. And he did that for a few years, or I think 3 years he ended up doing that. And then after he graduated from Delaware, he became involved in the program, the Flying Star Program. He got accepted into the program, and they brought him to Australia to work with Bloodstock there, and then they brought him to Ireland, I think, for another 6 months. So, yeah, 6 months in Australia, 6 months in Ireland, and then eventually came back here and started working for West Point, and you know, at least as a sales representative, just you know, trying to get people involved in partnerships and okay. And working with that. But this is probably one of the first stories I did for Saratoga Today, is that one of the things I found out once he you know just this as soon as he just started working with West Point, Joey is a poker player, and one of the, you know, and I guess he and a friend just had to be about maybe a couple. Was it basically, I think, maybe it was just Belmont weekend, or maybe it was around the Belmont stakes of that year, a couple of years ago. it was a Sunday, and they said, okay, we're done with all we have to do. Let's go to Mohegan Sun. Well, they had a World Series of Poker qualifying tournament there. He wins the tournament. He gets a, basically gets a bid to the World Series of Poker. So he's now in Vegas, and he realized that, and he did well for like the first, I think, 3 or 4 days, and he realized once they started getting, once the field started dwindling down, it got tougher, and he had, he got into better players at that, at that point. But it was, you know, and that's kind of, again, that's where I was working with the story. It's like, okay, here's someone graduating from Flying Star program, started, you know, becoming involved in, you know, different aspect of racing, just, you know, of getting people to buy into partnerships. And then, you know, all of a sudden you find out that he went to the World Series of Poker to, you know, to, as a participant, and, you know, and got deep into the tournament, but he realized that he just didn't have the energy to sustain it.
Sure.
And, you know, because it's so much of a, you know, critical thinking, game.
Oh yeah.
That you had to think, but yeah, that's one person I'm thinking of, that's come through the, you know, through the program, but
he's come, he comes from good bloodstock.
Yes. His father is, you know, is, the infamous jockey of, Richard Migliori, who does, some shows for Fox and, with the, you know, Racing Across America for, you know, obviously with Fox Sports itself, but yeah, it's, you know, very proud of Joey and what he has accomplished. And I think he's going to be, you know, someone's going to be staying with the business, but he's not the only one. I mean, there's been so many others that, that have come through the press box. I mean, it's interesting when I didn't find out, until I think maybe 2 years ago, just before the you know, again, just before the pandemic, Brandon Volvo, who did some work for the Saratoga, special for, the Clancy brothers and Tom Law. And, one of the things he didn't know, that I thought this was what he did all, you know, all year, and then, you know, then moved on to something else, but he actually lives in the area in Saratoga County. He, really? He's actually an accountant and, in Clifton Park. And I didn't realize this till I actually found him. I ran into him at Hudson Valley. He was helping, he was doing audits for, you know, helping us do audits for at Hudson Valley. And I was like, you know, what are you doing here? He goes, this is what I do. It's my part of my job. His real job is he's an accountant. And then in the summer, he finds some way to do, he does take some time off, but he tries to manage doing some writing for Saratoga Special and then doing his accounting work.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of people pass through there, a lot of kids, and you just... You get to be friends, and you follow them. You know, one of them is happens to be my cousin Billy Blake.
Yes,
and you helped him a lot on his career path.
Yeah, and Billy, you know, again, Billy is another example who, again, I'm just glad to see there's younger people who still want to follow racing, and that is showing that. That's still always going to be an interest of that. So even with Billy's case, and I'm glad you brought him up as well, because I forgot about Billy as well. sorry, Billy. I didn't forget about you. But, you know, Billy had been an assistant producer at WNYT, you know, doing the overnight shift for several years. Actually, maybe about 3 or 4 years, if I remember. And, you know, worked with, at that time, was Phil Bailey and Sabrina Dami, you know, basically getting them prepped for the morning show. And then once he was done, you know, he would, you know, come up the track and so forth. But he also joined the Saratoga Special team, worked for Tom Laws and the Clancy Brothers for one season. And then he ended up getting a job out in for XBTV for you know, out in Santa Anita. And I was actually, I got an opportunity a few years ago. I want to say about 3 or 4 years ago, to go see the studio out in Santa Anita itself. And, really impressive and what he was doing out there at that point. But again, another one, you know, another, young, rising star.
Yeah,
you
know, now he's back in the area.
Yeah,
and
I have not had a chance to see Billy in a while. And again, I was hoping to see him, you know, before the pandemic itself. But you know, again, it's just people you want to start, you know, rekindling, getting back together with people, just seeing what they're doing.
Well, he asked, he got me on Facebook and said, "You're going to be at the track?" And I said, "Oh yeah." He said, "I'll see you." Last thing I knew, he was doing the news for WGY.
Okay. But, well, yeah, he. That's he does more than the news for WGY. And I did, and I think I did touch base with him last year. He's part of, I don't want to say it's Clear Channel, maybe it's iHeart that he's doing the news for. But what he's doing is these 1 minute news segments that are outside the capital region as well. So, so for example, what he would do is he would get the news stories from the local station in Springfield, Mass, as an example, and you know, basically read the news for 1 minute, saying here's you know what's happened. You know, here's basically top three or four news stories for Springfield, Mass, or Holyoke, or you know wherever else. You know,
he has Syracuse area,
right? So that's what his job was, or at least what he has been doing, was just you know basically giving news updates in different areas and just pre-record it. And then send it off so they can just, you know, do it at the top and the bottom of the hour.
Yeah. I told him, you better be up and you better bring Molly with you. And Molly's his girlfriend.
Right.
And she's a sweetheart.
Oh, they took care of me a couple of years ago when I guess they had tickets for, actually, Molly got him tickets for the Philadelphia Eagles game. Because I'm also a huge, right.
That's right.
Eagles yeah, Philadelphia fan. Eagles. So I guess they had a wedding to go to. So he had to give up. They couldn't find anybody to take the tickets. And I found out, you know, it's like, I want to take the tickets. And so, excuse me. I looked at the seats like, oh, you know, end zone. I realized I'm like seven rows back in the end zone. Like, these are really good tickets at this point. So Linda and I, my wife and I went down for the game and a great experience. It was definitely, and that was another thing I wanted to do last year. We had planned, you know, before the pandemic, I wanted to get back to a Philadelphia Eagles game. I wanted to go to a Boston Red Sox game. But again, you know, that was, you know, the pandemic really just, really put everything on the shelf.
Well, I'll tell you, this year, I don't know if I think they're in the same league. Redskins and the Eagles, if they play in Philadelphia, maybe we should take a trip down because I'm a Redskins fan.
Yeah, the I was looking at the schedule to be when it came out, and because I was like, all right, I want to go see a game,
right?
And I also had to work it around Lindsay's cross country schedule because she, you know, along playing softball for Union, she is a runner as well. So in the fall, she runs for cross country, and in the winter she does indoor track. And we had to figure out, okay, what races do they have, and what games can we, you know, take off, or at least what. You know, when they're not running on the weekend, what, you know, are the Eagles going to be in Philadelphia at that point? And I think we're looking at one of two games right now. It's either San Francisco or Detroit, where, you know, which are plenty of seats. I've noticed with, like, games against the Giants, the Redskins, or Washington itself, and Dallas as well. Yeah, it's hard to find seats at that stage.
Yeah. I mean, you know, even Buffalo, I'd love to get up to Buffalo, but they're going to be tough to get to because they're on the rise, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, Josh Allen and, you know, and Stephon Diggs, I mean, you've got basically, I think, some life in that team that is, you know, captured attention. And you kind of look at the division now, it's like, are they going to be the leaders, you know, where you know, a team like New England who had dominated that division for years,
right.
You know, don't have, you know, the the
they
players
don't have
do.
The guns, yeah, right. And I mean the players for New England were often gotten to build around Brady,
right?
I mean, they used to have a great offensive line and a great defense line, yeah. But I mean now without Brady, you know, they don't need to spend the money on on all those big guys, but it'll be interesting. And but I think Josh Allen's got a heck of a career ahead of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
If he stays healthy.
Yeah.
You know, so, well, it's, you know, it's great talking to you. I don't know if there's anything you want to finish up with.
I'm just glad that things just seem to be approaching back to some sense of normalcy. I mean, I know it's becoming more of a cliche, but, it's been put out there. But, you know, it's glad to see that we're able to start getting back out in the public, you know, where we can feel comfortable, you know, in certain areas, especially if you know, if we've been vaccinated at that point. But I'm just glad to, you know, get back out again.
Yeah. I know that word normalcy has been a cliche,
yeah.
but it makes you feel good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you hear it all the time, but it's a good word because it means that you're getting back to, you know, to doing things the way you're used to doing it. Well, Tony, excuse me, I can't wait to see you in probably a week from Thursday, I think it is.
Yeah, and it's July 16th, so we're looking at today's the 2nd. I'm sorry, 3rd. So we're down to 13 days 13 or 12 days.
Yep. Yeah, Thursday, opening day, and hopefully that, you know, the listeners will be up there. And if you're in the clubhouse, stop at the bottom of the press box stairs, and if you're lucky, you can get a glimpse of Tony as he runs down the stairs, down into the winner's circle. But he sure is a guy to say hello to, and he's a great guy, and I consider my friendship with him a blessing.
Thank you, Rick. Same thing here as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tony, thanks for being with us. I know
thank you for having me here, at least for this morning.
That's not a problem. Have a great 4th.
Yes, you too, Rick.
All right, everybody, have a great 4th, and we'll see you next week.